Phantom by Terry Goodkind. To Phil and Deborah Pizzolatto and their kids, Joey, Nicolette, Philip, and Adriana, who constantly remind me of the value of life by bringing their love and laughter to mine. Those who have come here to hate should leave now, for in their hatred they only betray themselves. Translated from the Book of Life. Chapter 1. Kaelin stood quietly in the shadows, watching, as evil knocked softly on the door. Huddled under the small overhang off to the side, she hoped that no one would answer that knock. As much as she would like to spend the night in out of the rain, she didn't want trouble to visit innocent people. She knew, though, that she had no say in the matter. The light of a single lantern flickered weakly through the slender windows to either side of the door, reflecting a pale, shimmering glow off the wet floor of the portico. The sign overhead hung by two iron rings, grated and squealed each time it swung back and forth in the wind-borne rain. Kaelin was able to make out the spectral white shape of a horse painted on the dark, wet sign. The light from the windows wasn't enough to enable her to read the name, but because the other three women with her had talked of little else for days, Kaelin knew that the name would be the White Horse Inn. By the smell of manure and wet hay, she thought that one of the dark buildings nearby had to be a stable. In the sporadic displays of distant lightning, she could just make out the hulking shoulders of dark structures standing like ghosts beyond the billowing sheets of rain. Despite the steady roar of the deluge and the rumble of thunder, it appeared that the village was sound asleep. Kaelin could think of no better place to be on such a dark and wretched night than bundled up under bed covers, safe and warm. A horse in the nearby stable whinnied when Sister Ulysia knocked a second time, louder, more insistently, evidently intending herself to be heard over the riot of rain, yet not so loud as to sound hostile. Sister Ulysia, a woman given to reckless impulse, seemed to be taking a deliberately restrained approach. Kaelin didn't know why, but imagined that it had to do with the reason they were there. It also might have been nothing more than the random nature of her moods. Like lightning, the woman's smoldering bad temper was not only dangerous but unpredictable. Kaelin couldn't always tell exactly when Sister Ulysia would lash out, and just because she so far hadn't, didn't mean that she wouldn't. Neither of the other two sisters was in any better mood, nor any less inclined toward losing their temper. Kaelin supposed that soon enough the three of them would be happy and quietly celebrating the reunion. Lightning flashed close enough that the blinding but halting incandescence briefly revealed a whole street of buildings crowded close around the muddy, rutted road. Thunder boomed through the mountainous countryside and shook the ground beneath their feet. Kaelin wished that there was something, like the way lightning revealed things otherwise hidden in the obscurity of night, that could help illuminate the hidden memories of her past and bring to light what was concealed by the murky mystery of who she was. She had a fierce longing to be free of the sisters, a burning desire to live her own life, to know what her life really was. That much she knew about herself. She knew, too, that her convictions had to be founded in experience. It was obvious to her that there had to be something there, people and events, that had helped make her the woman she was, but try as she might to recall them, they were lost to her. That terrible day she stole the boxes for the sisters, she had promised herself that someday she would find the truth of who she was, and she would be free. When Sister Ulysia knocked a third time, a muffled voice came from inside.
"I heard you."
It was a man's voice. His bare feet thumped down wooden stairs.
"I'll be right there. A moment, please."
His annoyance at having been awakened in the middle of the night was layered over with forced deference to potential customers. Sister Ulysia turned a sullen look on Kaelin. "You know that we have business here." She lifted a cautionary finger before Kaelin's face. "Don't you even think of giving us any trouble, or you'll get what you got the last time." Kaelin swallowed at the reminder. "Yes, Sister Ulysia." "Toby had better have gotten us a room," Sister Cecilia complained. "I'm in no mood to be told the place is full." "There will be room," Sister Armina said with soothing assurance. cutting off Sister Cecilia's habit of always assuming the worst. Sister Armina wasn't older, like Sister Cecilia, but nearly as young and attractive as Sister Ulysia. To Kaelin, though, their looks were insignificant in light of their inner nature. To Kaelin, they were vipers. One way or another, Sister Ulysia added under her breath as she glared at the door, there will be room. Lightning arced through the greenish, roiling clouds, releasing an ear-splitting boom of thunder. The door opened a crack. The shadowed face of a man peered out at them as he worked to button up his trousers under his nightshirt. He moved his head a little to each side so that he could take in the strangers. Judging them to be less than dangerous, he pulled open the door and with a sweeping gesture ushered them inside. "Come on in, then," he said, "all of you." "Who is it?" a woman called out as she descended the stairs to the rear. She carried a lantern in one hand and held the hem of her nightdress up with the other, so that she wouldn't trip on it as she hurried down the steps. "Four women traveling in the middle of a rainy night," the man told her, his gruff tone alluding to what he thought of such a practice. Kaelin froze in mid-stride. He'd said, four women. He had seen all four of them, and had remembered as much long enough to say so. As far as she could recall, such a thing had never happened before. No one but her masters, the four sisters, the three with her and the one they had come to meet, ever remembered seeing her. Sister Cecilia shoved Kaelin in ahead of her, apparently not catching the significance of the remark. "Well, for goodness sake," the woman said as she hurried between the two plank tables. She tisked at the foul weather as the wind drove a rattle of rain against the windows. "Do get them in out of that awful weather, Orlan." Streamers of fat raindrops chased them in the door, wetting a patch of pine floor. The man's mouth twisted with displeasure as he pushed the door closed against a wet gust and then dropped the heavy iron bar back in the brackets to bolt the door. The woman, her hair gathered up in a loose bun, lifted her lantern a little as she peered at the late-night guests. Puzzled, she squinted as her gaze swept over the drenched visitors and then back again. Her mouth opened, but then she seemed to forget what she had been about to say. Kaelin had seen that blank look a thousand times, and knew that the woman only remembered seeing three callers. No one could ever remember seeing Kaelin long enough to say so. She was as good as invisible. Kaelin thought that maybe because of the darkness and the rain, the man, Orlan, had merely made a mistake when he'd said to his wife that there were four visitors. "Come in and get yourselves dry," the woman said as she smiled in earnest warmth. She hooked a hand under Sister Ulysia's arm, drawing her into the small gathering room. "Welcome to the White Horse Inn." The other two sisters, openly scrutinizing the room, took off their cloaks and gave them a quick shake before tossing them over a bench at one of the two tables. Kaelin noticed a single dark doorway at the back, beside the stairs. A fireplace made of stacked flat stones took up most of the wall to the right. The air in the dimly lit room was warm and carried the distractingly enticing aroma of a stew in the iron pot hung from a crane pushed to the side of the hearth. Hot coals glowed out from under a thick layer of feathery ashes. "You three ladies look like drowned cats. You must be miserable." The woman turned to the man and gestured. "Orlan, get the fire going." Kaelin saw a young girl of maybe 11 or 12 years slip down the stairs just far enough so she could see into the room from under the low ceiling. Her long white nightdress with ruffled cuffs had a pony stitched in coarse brown thread on the front, with a row of loose strands of dark yarn making up the mane and tail. The girl sat on the steps to watch, tenting her nightdress over her bony knees. Her grin revealed big teeth that she had yet to grow into. Strangers arriving in the middle of the night apparently was an adventure at the White Horse Inn. Kaelin dearly hoped that that was all there would be to the adventure. Orlan, a big bear of a man, knelt at the hearth, stacking on a few sticks of wood. His thick, stubby fingers made the wedges of oak look to be little more than kindling. "What would possess you ladies to travel in the rain, at night?" he asked as he cast them a look over his shoulder. "We're in a hurry to catch up with a friend of ours," Sister Ulysia said, offering a meaningless smile. She kept her tone businesslike. "She was to meet us here. Her name is Tovey. She will be expecting us." The man put a hand on his knee to help himself up. "Those guests who stay with us, especially in such troubled times, are pretty discreet. Most don't give their names." He lifted an eyebrow at Sister Alicia. "Much like you, ladies. Not giving your names, that is."
"Orland, they're guests," the woman scolded.
"Wet and no doubt tired and hungry guests." She flashed a smile. "Folks call me Emmy. My husband, Orland, and I have run the White Horse since his parents passed away years back." Emmy gathered up three wooden bowls from a shelf. "You ladies must be famished. Let me get you some stew. Orland, get some mugs and fetch these ladies some hot tea." Orland lifted a meaty hand on his way past, indicating the bowls his wife cradled in an arm.
"You're one short."
She twitched a frown at him.
"No, I'm not. I have three bowls."
Orland pulled four mugs down from the top shelf of the hutch.
"Right, like I said, you're one short."
Kaelin could hardly breathe. Something was very wrong. Sister Cecilia and Armina had frozen dead still, their wide eyes fixed on the man. The significance of the couple's chit-chat had not escaped them. Kaelin glanced to the stairwell and saw the girl on the steps leaning toward them, gripping the rails, peering out, trying to fathom what her parents were talking about. Sister Armina snatched Sister Ulysia's sleeve.
"Ulysia," she said in an urgent whisper through gritted teeth. "He sees..."
Sister Ulysia shushed her. Her brow drew down in a dark glare as she turned her attention back to the man.
"You are mistaken," she said. "There are only three of us."
At the same time she was talking, she prodded Kaelin with a stout oak rod she carried, shoving her farther back into the shadows behind, as if shadows alone would make Kaelin invisible to the man. Kaelin didn't want to be in the shadows. She wanted to stand in the light and be seen, really seen. Such a thing had always seemed an impossible dream, but it had suddenly become a real possibility. That possibility had shaken the three sisters. Orland frowned at Sister Ulysia. Holding all four mugs in the grip of one meaty hand, he used his other to point out each visitor standing in his gathering room.
"One, two, three."
He leaned to the side, looking around Sister Ulysia to point at Kaelin.
"Four. Do you all want tea?"
Kaelin blinked in astonishment. Her heart felt as if it had come up in her throat. He saw her, and remembered what he saw. Chapter 2. "It can't be," Sister Cecilia whispered as she wrung her hands. She leaned toward Sister Ulysia, her eyes darting about. "It's impossible." Her familiar, incessant, but meaningless smile was nowhere in evidence. "Something's gone wrong." Sister Armina's voice trailed off when her sky-blue eyes glanced Sister Ulysia's way. "It's nothing more than an anomaly," Sister Ulysia growled under her breath as she leveled a dangerous look at the two of them. Never ones to be servile, the two nonetheless showed no evidence of wanting to argue with their stormy leader. In three strong strides, Sister Ulysia closed the distance to Orland. She seized the collar of his nightshirt in her fist. With her other hand, she swished her oak rod in the direction of Kaelin, standing in the shadows back near the door.
"What does she look like?"
"Like a drowned cat," Orland said in ill humor, obviously not liking her hand on his collar. Kaelin knew without doubt that using such a tone of voice with Sister Ulysia was the wrong thing to do. But the sister, instead of exploding in a rage, seemed to be just as astonished as Kaelin.
"I know that, but what does she look like? Tell me what you see."
Orland straightened, pulling his collar away from her grip. His features drew tight as he appraised the stranger only he and the sisters saw standing in the weak light of the lanterns.
"Thick hair, green eyes, a very attractive woman. She'd look a lot better if she were dried out, although those wet things on her do tend to show off what she's made of."
He began to smile in a way that Kaelin didn't like one bit, even if she was overjoyed that he really saw her.
"Mighty fine figure on her," he added, more to himself than the sister.
His slow and deliberate evaluation made Kaelin feel naked. As his gaze roamed over her, he wiped the corner of his mouth with a thumb. She could hear it rasp against his stubble. One of the sticks of wood in the hearth caught flame, brightening the room in its flickering glow, letting him see even more. His gaze wandered upward, and then caught on something.
Her hair is as long as...
Orland's bawdy smile evaporated. He blinked in surprise. His eyes widened. "Dear spirits," he whispered as his face went ashen. He dropped to a knee. "Forgive me," he said, addressing Kaelin. "I didn't recognize..." The room rang with a crack as Sister Ulysia whacked him across the top of the head with her oak rod, dropping him to both knees.
"Silence! What's the matter with you?"
The man's wife cried out as she rushed to her husband's side. She squatted, putting an arm around his shoulders to steady him as he groaned, and put a big hand over the bloody wound on the top of his bowed head. His sandy-colored hair turned dark and wet under his fingers.
"Are all of you crazy?"
She cradled her husband's head to her breast, where a red stain grew against her nightdress. He appeared stunned, senseless.
"Unless you travel in the company of a spirit, there are only three of you. How dare you?"
"Silence!"
Sister Ulysia growled in a way that gave Kaelin an icy shiver and made the woman's mouth snap closed. Rain pattered against the window while in the distance a slow rumble of thunder rolled through the forested hills. Kaelin could hear the sign squeaking as it swung to and fro each time the wind gusted. Inside the house, it had gone dead silent. Sister Ulysia looked over at the girl, now at the bottom of the steps, where she stood gripping the simple, square, wooden newel post. Sister Ulysia fixed the girl in a glare that only a sorceress in a vile mood could marshal. "How many visitors do you see?" The girl stood wide-eyed, too frightened to speak.
"How many?"
Sister Ulysia asked again, this time through gritted teeth in a voice so threatening that it made the girl's grip on the newel post tighten until her fingers stood out white and bloodless against the dark wood. The girl finally answered in a meek voice,
"Three."
Sister Armina, looking like bottled thunder, leaned close. "Ulysia, what's going on? This isn't supposed to be possible. Not possible at all. We cast the verification webs."
"Exterior," Sister Cecilia corrected.
Sister Armina blinked at the older woman.
"What?"
"We only cast exterior verification webs. We didn't do an interior review."
"Are you out of your mind?" Sister Armina snapped.
"In the first place, it isn't necessary, and in the second place, who would be fool enough to be the one to do an aspect analysis of a verification web from an interior perspective? No one ever does such a thing. It isn't necessary. I'm only saying..." With a withering look, Sister Ulysia silenced them both. Sister Cecilia, her wet curls plastered to her scalp, looked like she was about to finish her complaint, but then decided instead to remain mute. Orland seemed to recover his senses as he pulled away from his wife's embrace and began to stagger to his feet. Blood ran down his forehead and to either side of his broad nose.
"Were I you, innkeeper,"
Sister Ulysia said, turning her attention back to him, "I'd remain on my knees." The menace in her voice gave him pause for only a moment. He was clearly angry as he rose up to his full height, letting his bloody hand drop away from his head. His back straightened, his chest expanded, and his fists tightened. Kaelin could clearly tell that his temper was outpacing his sense of caution. Sister Ulysia indicated with her rod that she wanted Kaelin to back away. Kaelin, ignoring the direction, instead stepped closer to Sister Ulysia, hoping to change the rush of events before it ended up being too late. "Please, Sister Ulysia, he will answer your questions. I know he will. Let him be." The three sisters turned unpleasantly surprised looks on Kaelin. She had not been spoken to or asked to speak. Such insolence would cost her dearly, she knew. But she also knew what was liable to happen to the man if something didn't change, and right then it seemed to her that she was the only one who could effect a change. Besides, Kaelin knew that this was her only chance to find out something about herself, to perhaps find out who she really was, and maybe even why she could remember only the most recent parts of her life. This man had clearly recognized her. He very well might be the key that could unlock her lost past. She dared not let the chance slip away, even if she had to risk the sister's wrath. Before the sisters had a chance to say anything, Kaelin addressed the man. "Please, Master Orlin, listen for a moment. We're looking for an older woman named Tovey. She was to meet these women here. We were delayed, so she should already be here, waiting for us. Please, answer their questions about their friend. This could all be quickly resolved if you would hurry upstairs and get Tovey for them. Then, like this passing storm, we will all soon be out of your lives." The man reverently dipped his head, as if a queen had asked his help. Kaelin was not only surprised, but completely bewildered by such an act of deference. "But we have no guest named Tovey here, The room lit with a blinding flash. Lightning that was the match of anything out in the raging storm. The twisting rope of liquid heat and light that ignited from between Sister Ulysia's hands blasted across Orlin's chest before he could finish the appellation he had been about to use. The jarring concussion from being so close to the explosive detonation of such thunderous power hammered deep into the core of Kaelin's chest. The impact threw Orlin back, sending him crashing through a table and both benches, slamming him against the wall. The deadly contact with such power had nearly cut the man in half. Smoke curled up from what was left of his shirt. A glistening red splatter of gore marked the wall where he'd hit, before slumping to the ground. In the aftermath of the deafening blast, Kaelin's ears rang in what seemed the sudden silence. Emmy, her eyes wide with the shock of an event that had, in an instant, forever altered the course of her life, wailed the single word, "No!" Kaelin pressed a hand over her mouth and nose, not just in revulsion, but to mask the smell of blood and the stench of burned flesh. The lantern that had been on the table had been thrown to the floor and extinguished, leaving the room mostly to the wavering shadows cast by the fire in the hearth and the sporadic flashes of lightning coming in the slender windows. Had it not been a night already filled with thunder and lightning, such a blast would surely have awakened the entire town. The wooden bowls Emmy had been holding clattered down onto the floor and rolled drunkenly away. She screamed in horror and ran toward her husband. Sister Ulysia came unhinged. In a fury, she intercepted Emmy before she could reach her dead husband. Sister Ulysia slammed the woman against the wall. "Where's Tovey? I want answers, and I want them right now!" Kaelin saw that the sister had brought her dacra to hand. The simple weapon looked like nothing more than a knife handle with a sharpened metal rod in place of a blade. All three sisters carried a dacra. Kaelin had seen them use the weapons when they had encountered Imperial Order scouts. She knew that once the dacra had pierced a victim, no matter how minor the penetration, it took only a thought on the sister's part to kill. With the dacra, it was not the wound itself that killed, but rather the sister who, through the dacra, extinguished the spark of life. If the sister didn't withdraw the weapon, along with her intent to kill, there was no defense and no chance of salvation. A confusing, faltering flash of lightning lit the room through the narrow windows beside the door, throwing long spikes of shadows across the floor and against the walls as two sisters together snatched the panicked woman, struggling to control her. As the fit of lightning ended and a dark pall again descended over the room, the third sister raced up the stairwell. Kaelin went for the girl. As she ran toward her mother, Kaelin intercepted the girl, hooking her around her middle, holding her back. Her eyes went wide in panic, her mind unable to maintain the memory of seeing Kaelin even long enough for her to be aware of who or what had grabbed her, seemingly out of thin air. Far worse, though, she had just seen her father killed. Kaelin knew that the girl would never be able to forget such a terrible sight. Over the steady drumbeat of rain and wind, Kaelin heard the footfalls of the sister upstairs as she rushed down the hallway. She paused intermittently, stopping at each room to throw open a door. Any guests who had been awakened by the commotion and shouting, and dared to come out of their room into the dark hall, were about to face a sister of the dark on a rampage. Those still asleep behind their doors would face no less. Emmy cried out in pain. Kaelin knew why.
"Where is she?"
Sister Ulysia yelled at the woman.
"Where's Tovey?"
Emmy screamed, begging that her daughter not be harmed. Kayla knew that it was a grave tactical mistake to betray to an enemy what you feared most. In this case, however, she supposed that such information was irrelevant. Not only was it pretty obvious what a mother would fear, but the sisters needed no such leverage. Seeing her mother in a state of unbridled terror was only serving to frighten the child all that much more. She struggled mightily. Despite her frantic effort, such a slender girl was no match for Kaylin. Holding the girl tightly, Kaylin pulled her back through the doorway beside the stairs and into the darkened room beyond. In the flashes of lightning coming through a window at the rear, Kaylin saw that it was a kitchen and storage area for supplies. The girl cried in wild panic that was the match of her mother's.
"It's all right,"
Kaylin whispered in the girl's ear as she held her tight, trying to calm her.
"I'll protect you. It's all right."
Kaylin knew that it was a lie, but her heart would not allow the truth. The slender slip of a girl pawed at Kaylin's arms. It must have seemed to her as if she were being held by a spirit clutching at her from the underworld. If she even saw Kaylin, Kaylin knew that the girl would forget her before her mind could transform perception into cognition. Likewise, Kaylin's words of comfort would evaporate from the girl's mind before they had a chance to even begin to be comprehended. Within an instant after seeing her, no one ever remembered that Kaylin existed. Except Orlan. And now he was dead. Kaylin hugged the terrified girl tight. She didn't know if it wasn't really more for her own sake than the girl's. At that moment, keeping the girl away from the terror of what was befalling her parents was all Kaylin could do. The girl, for her part, writhed madly in Kaylin's arms, trying to twist away, as if she were being held by a monster intent on bloody murder. Kaylin hated adding to her terror, but letting her go into the other room would be worse. Lightning flashed again, making Kaylin glance to the window. The window was large enough for her to get through. It was dark outside, and the dense forest lay tight up to the buildings. She had long legs. She was strong and quick. She knew that if she chose, she could in a few heartbeats be through the window and into the thick of the woods. But she had tried to escape the sisters before. She knew that neither night nor woods would conceal her from women with such dark talents. Kneeling there in the dark, her arms holding the girl in a tight embrace, Kaylin began to tremble. The mere contemplation of an attempt at escape was enough to make her brow bead in sweat for fear that such a notion would unleash within her the embedded constraints. Her head swam dizzily with the memory of past attempts, memories of the agony. She couldn't take such suffering again, not when it was to no purpose. Escaping the sisters was impossible. When she glanced up, Kaylin saw the dark shadow of a sister descending the stairs. "Ulysia," the woman called out. It was Sister Cecilia's voice. "The rooms upstairs are all empty. There are no guests." In the front room, Sister Ulysia growled a dark curse. The shadow of Sister Cecilia turned from the stairs to fill the doorway, like death itself turning its withering gaze on the living. Beyond, Emmy wailed and wept. In her confusion, grief, pain, and terror, she was unable to answer Sister Ulysia's shouted questions. "Do you want your mother to die?" Sister Cecilia asked from the doorway in that deadly calm voice of hers. She was no less cruel or dangerous than Sister Armina or Sister Ulysia, but she had a quiet, composed way of speaking that was somehow more terrifying than Sister Ulysia's screaming. Sister Armina's straightforward threats were simple and sincere, but delivered with a bit more bile. Sister Tovey had a kind of sick glee in her approach to discipline, and even torture. When any of them wanted something, though, Kaylin had long ago learned that to deny them would only bring nearly unimaginable suffering, and in the end what they had wanted in the first place. "Do you?" Sister Cecilia repeated with calm directness.
"Answer her," Kaylin whispered in the girl's ear. "Please, answer her questions. Please."
"No," the girl managed. "Then tell us where Tovey is." In the room behind Sister Cecilia, the girl's mother gasped in a terrible rattle and then went silent. Kaelin heard bony thumps as the woman hit the wood floor. The house fell quiet. From the dim, flickering light beyond the doorway, two more shadows glided up behind Sister Cecilia. Kaelin knew that Emmy would answer no more questions. Sister Cecilia slipped into the room, closer to the girl Kaelin held tightly in her arms. "The rooms are all empty. Why are there no guests in your inn?"
"None have come," the girl managed as she shook.
"Word of the invaders from the old world has scared people away." Kaelin knew that that made sense. After leaving the People's Palace in Dahara and swiftly traveling south through mostly remote country on a small riverboat, they still had encountered detachments of Emperor Jagang's troops more than once, or been through river settlements where those brutes had been. Word of such atrocities would have spread like an ill wind. "Where is Tovi?" Sister Cecilia asked. Holding the girl protectively away from the sisters, Kaelin glared up at them.
"She's just a child. Leave her be."
A shock of pain slammed into her. It felt to Kaelin as if every fiber of every muscle had violently ripped. For an instant, she didn't know where she was or what was happening. The room spun. Her back hit the cupboards with bone-breaking force. Doors flew open. Pots, pans, and utensils cascaded out, bouncing and clattering across the wooden floor. Dishes and glasses shattered as they came crashing down. Kaelin slammed face down onto the floor. Jagged, broken shards of pottery slashed her palms as she tried unsuccessfully to break her fall. When she felt the end of something razor-sharp pressed against the side of her tongue and back, she realized that a long sliver of glass had pierced her cheek. She clenched her jaw, snapping off the glass between her teeth so that it wouldn't slash open her tongue. With effort, she managed to spit out the bloody, dagger-like piece of glass. She lay sprawled on the floor, stunned, disoriented, unable to fully gather her senses. Grunts escaped her throat as she tried without success to move. She found that as those sounds slipped out, she couldn't draw a new breath back in. Each bit of air that escaped her lungs was a bit of air lost to her. Her muscles strained to pull the wind back into her lungs. The pain lancing through her middle was paralyzing, acting to counter her effort to get a breath. In desperation, she gasped, at last managing to pull in an urgent breath. She spat out more blood and sharp splinters of glass. She was just beginning to feel the twinge of pain from the fragment still stuck through her cheek. Kaelin couldn't seem to make her arms work, couldn't lift herself up from the floor, much less reach up to pull out the piece of glass. She turned her eyes upward. She could make out the dark forms of the sisters closing in around the girl. They lifted her and shoved her back against a heavy butcher block standing in the center of the room. A sister held each arm as Sister Ulysia squatted down before the girl to meet her panicked gaze.
"Do you know who Tovi is?"
"The old woman," the girl cried out. "The old woman!"
"Yes, the old woman. What else do you know about her?"
The girl gulped air, almost unable to get the words out.
"Big. She was big. Old and big. She was too big to walk real good."
Sister Ulysia leaned close, gripping the girl's slender throat.
"Where is she? Why isn't she here? She was supposed to meet us here. Why is she gone?"
"Gone?"
the girl cried.
"She's gone! Why? When was she here? When did she leave? Why did she leave?" "A few days back. She was here. She stayed with us for a while, but she left a few days back."
Sister Ulysia, with a cry of rage, lifted the girl and heaved her against the wall. With all her effort, Kaelin struggled to her hands and knees. The girl crashed down to the floor. Ignoring how wobbly she felt, Kaelin crawled across the floor, across broken glass and pottery, and threw herself protectively across the girl's body. The girl, not knowing what was happening, cried out all the more. Footsteps came toward her. Kaelin saw a cleaver lying on the floor nearby. The girl cried and struggled to get away, but Kaelin held her protectively against the floor. As the shadows of the women came closer, Kaelin's fingers closed around the wooden handle of the heavy cleaver. She wasn't thinking. She was simply acting. Threat, weapon. It was almost like watching someone else doing it. But there was a kind of deep inner satisfaction at having a weapon in her hand. Her fist tightened around the blood-slicked handle. The weapon was life. Flashes of lightning glinted off the steel. When the women were close enough, Kaelin suddenly raised her arm to strike. Before she could begin to accomplish her task, she felt a gut-wrenching blow, as if she had been rammed by the butt end of a log. The power of that blow hurled her across the room. A hard impact against the wall stunned her. The room seemed like it was far away, off at the far end of a long, dark tunnel. Pain swamped her. She tried to lift her head, but couldn't. Darkness pulled her in. The next time she opened her eyes, Kaelin saw the girl cringing before the sisters as they towered over her.
"I don't know," the girl was saying. "I don't know why she left. She said she had to be on her way to Casca."
The room rang with silence.
"Casca?" Sister Armina finally asked.
"Yes, that's what she said. She had to get to Casca."
"Did she have anything with her?"
"With her?"
the girl whined, still sobbing and shivering.
"I don't understand. What do you mean, with her?"
"With her!"
Sister Alicia screamed.
"What did she have with her? She had to be carrying things, a pack, a water skin, but she had other things. Did you see anything else of what she had with her?"
When the girl hesitated, Sister Alicia smacked her across the face hard enough to have loosened her teeth.
"Did you see anything she had with her?"
A long string of blood from the girl's nose lay horizontally across her cheek.
"When she was at supper one day, I went to take her clean towels, and I saw something in her room, something strange."
Sister Cecilia leaned down. "Strange? Like what?"
It was like a box. She had it wrapped in a white dress, but the dress was silky smooth, and it had partly slipped off the box. It was like a box, only it was all black, but not black like paint. It was black like night itself, black like it would take the light right out of the day."
The three sisters straightened and stood in silence. Kaelin knew exactly what the girl was talking about. Kaelin had gone in and taken all three of those boxes from the Garden of Life in the People's Palace, from Lord Rawl's palace. When she had brought the first one out, Sister Alicia had been furious at Kaelin for not bringing all three of them out at once. But they were larger than expected, and there had been no room to hide them all in her pack, so Kaelin had at first brought out only one. Sister Alicia had wrapped that vile thing in Kaelin's white dress and had given it to Tovi, telling her to hurry and be on her way, that they would all meet up later. Sister Alicia hadn't wanted to risk getting caught in the palace with one of the three boxes, and so she hadn't wanted Sister Tovi to wait while Kaelin went back up into the Garden of Life after the other two boxes.
"Why did Tovi go to Casca?"
Sister Alicia asked.
"I don't know," the girl wept. "I don't know. I swear I don't. I only know that I heard her say to my parents that she had to be on her way to Casca. She left a few days back."
In the quiet, lying against the floor, Kaelin struggled to breathe. Each breath sent agonizing stitches of pain through her ribs. She knew that it was only going to be the beginning of the pain. When the sisters finished with the girl, they would turn their attention to Kaelin.
"Maybe we had better get some sleep in out of the rain," Sister Armina finally suggested.
"We can start out early." Sister Alicia, her fist with the dacra on her hip, paced between the girl and the butcher block, thinking. Shards of pottery crunched under her boots.
"No,"
she said as she turned back to the others. "Something is wrong."
"You mean with the spell form? You mean because of the man?"
Sister Alicia waved a hand dismissively. "An anomaly, nothing more.
No, something is wrong about the rest of it. Why would Tovi leave? She had explicit instructions to meet us here. And she was here. But then she leaves. There were no other guests, no Imperial Order troops in the area. She knew we were on our way, and yet she leaves. It makes no sense."
"And why Casca?" Sister Cecilia asked. "Why would she head for Casca?" Sister Alicia turned back to the girl.
"Who visited Tovi while she was here? Who came to see her?"
"I already told you, no one. No one at all came here while the old woman was staying with us. We had no other callers or guests. She was the only one here. This place is out of the way. People don't come here for stretches."
Sister Alicia went back to her pacing. I don't like it. Something is wrong about this, but I can't put my finger on it.
I agree, Sister Cecilia said. Toby wouldn't just leave.
And yet she did. Why?
Sister Alicia came to a stop before the girl. Did she say anything else, or leave a message? Perhaps a letter?
The girl, snuffling back a sob, shook her head. We have no choice, Sister Alicia muttered. We're going to have to follow Toby to Casca.
Sister Armina gestured toward the front door. Tonight? In the rain? Don't you think we ought to wait until morning?
Sister Alicia, deep in thought, looked up at the woman. What if someone shows up? We don't need any more complications if we're to accomplish our task. We certainly don't need Jagang or his troops getting a whiff of us being about. We need to get to Toby, and we need to get that box. We all know what's at stake. She took the measure of both women's grave expressions before going on. What we don't need are any witnesses who can report that we were here and what we're looking for.
Kayla knew very well what Sister Alicia was getting at. Please, she managed as she pushed herself up on shaky arms. Please, leave her be. She's just a little girl. She doesn't know anything of any value to anyone.
She knows Toby was here. She knows what Toby has with her.
Sister Alicia's brow drew tight with displeasure. She knows we were here looking for her.
Kaelin struggled to put force into her voice. She is nothing to you. You're sorceresses. She is but a child. She can do you no harm.
Sister Alicia glanced briefly over her shoulder at the girl. She also knows where we're going.
Sister Alicia looked deliberately into Kaelin's eyes. Without turning to the girl behind her, and with sudden force, she slammed her dakra back into the girl's midsection. The girl gasped in shock. Still staring down at Kaelin, Sister Alicia smiled at such a deed as only evil could smile. Kaelin thought that this must be what it would be like looking into the eyes of the Keeper of the Dead in his lair, in the darkest depths of the eternity of the underworld.
Sister Alicia arched an eyebrow. I don't intend to leave any loose ends.
Light seemed to flash from within the girl's wide eyes. She went slack and fell heavily to the floor. Her arms sprawled out at crazy angles. Her lifeless gaze stared fixedly right at Kaelin as if to denounce her for not keeping her word.
Her promise to the girl, "I'll protect you," rang through Kaelin's mind.
She cried out in helpless fury as she pounded her fists against the floor. And then she cried out in sudden pain as she was flung back against the wall. Rather than crash to the floor, she stuck there, as if held by a great strength. The strength, she knew, was magic. She couldn't breathe. One of the sisters was using her power to constrict Kaelin's throat. She strained, trying to get air, as she clawed at the iron collar around her neck.
Sister Alicia approached and put her face close to Kaelin's.
You are lucky this day, she said in a venomous voice. We don't have time to make you regret your disobedience, not right now anyway. But don't think that you're going to get away with it without suffering the consequences.
No, sister, Kaelin managed to say with great effort. She knew that not to answer would only make it worse yet.
I guess that you're simply too stupid to comprehend how insignificant and powerless you are in the face of your betters. Perhaps this time, when you are given another lesson, even one as lowly and ignorant as you will understand it.
Yes, sister.
Even though she knew quite well what they would make her endure to teach her that lesson, Kaelin would have done the same thing again. She regretted only failing to protect the girl, as she had promised. The day she had taken those three boxes out of Lord Rawl's palace, she had left in their place her most prized possession, a small statue of a proud woman, her fists at her side, her back arched, and her head thrown back as if facing forces that would subdue her, but could not. Kaelin had gathered strength that day in Richard Rawl's palace. Standing in his garden, looking back at the proud statue she had had to leave there, Kaelin had sworn that she would have her life back.
Having her life back meant fighting for life, even if it was the life of a little girl she didn't know.
"Let's go," Sister Alicia growled as she marched toward the door, expecting everyone to follow. Kaylin's boots thumped down on the floor when the force pressing her to the wall abruptly released her. She collapsed to her knees, her bloody hands comforting her throat as she gasped for air. Her fingers encountered the hated collar by which the sisters controlled her.
"Move,"
Sister Cecilia ordered in a tone that had Kaylin scrambling to her feet. She glanced over her shoulder and saw the poor girl's dead eyes staring at her, watching her go. Chapter 3. Richard stood suddenly. The legs of the heavy wooden chair he'd been sitting in chattered as they slid back across the rough stone floor. His fingertips still rested on the edge of the table where the book he'd been reading lay open, before the silver lantern. There was something wrong with the air. Not with the way it smelled, or with the temperature, or with the humidity, although it was a warm and sticky night. It was the air itself. Something felt wrong about the air. Richard couldn't imagine why he would suddenly be struck with such a thought. He couldn't even begin to imagine what it was that could be the cause of such an odd notion. There were no windows in the small reading room, so he didn't know what it was like outside, if it was clear or windy or stormy. He knew only that it was deep in the night. Kara, not far away behind him, stood up from the thickly padded brown leather chair where she, too, had been reading. She waited, but said nothing. Richard had asked her to read several historical volumes he'd found. Whatever she could find out about the ancient times when the Chainfire book had been written might prove helpful. She hadn't complained about the task. Kara rarely complained about anything as long as it didn't in any way prevent her from protecting him. Since she was able to stay right there in the room with him, she'd had no objections to reading the books he'd given her. One of the other moored Sith, Berdine, could read High Dahauran, and had in the past been very helpful with things written in the ancient language often found in rare books. But Berdine was far away at the People's Palace. That still left uncountable volumes written in their own language for Kara to review. Kara watched him as he peered around at the paneled walls, his gaze passing methodically over the ornamental oddities on the shelves, the lacquered boxes with inlaid silver designs, the small figures of dancers carved from bone, the smooth stones lying in velvet-lined boxes, and the decorative glass vases. "Lord Rawl," she finally asked, "is something wrong?" Richard glanced back over his shoulder. "Yes, there's something wrong with the air." He realized only after seeing the tense concern in her expression that it must have sounded absurd saying that there was something wrong with the air. To Kara, though, no matter how absurd it may have sounded, all that really mattered was that he thought there was some kind of trouble, and trouble meant a potential threat. Her leather outfit creaked as she spun her Ajeel up into her fist. Weapon at the ready, she peered around the little room, searching the shadows as if a ghost might pop out of the woodwork. Her brow drew tighter. "The beast, do you think?" Richard hadn't considered that possibility. The beast that Jagang had ordered his captured Sisters of the Dark to conjure and send after Richard was always a potential threat. There had been several times in the past when it had seemed to appear out of the very air itself. Try as he might, Richard couldn't tell precisely what it was that felt wrong to him. Although he couldn't put his finger on the source of the sensation, it seemed like maybe it was something he should remember, something he should know, something he should recognize. He couldn't decide if such a feeling was real or merely his imagination. He shook his head. "No, I don't think it's the beast. Not wrong in that way. Lord Rawl, on top of everything else, you've been up most of the night reading. Perhaps it's just that you're exhausted." There were times when he did wake with a start, just as he began to doze off, foggy and disoriented from the gathering descent into the dark grasp of nightmares that he never remembered when he woke. But this impression was different. It was not something born out of the dullness of dozing off to sleep. Besides, despite his fatigue, he hadn't been about to fall asleep. He was too anxious to sleep. It had only been the day before that he had finally convinced the others that Kaylin was real, that she existed, and that she wasn't a figment of his imagination or a delusion caused by an injury. At long last, they now knew that Kaelin was not some crazy dream he was having. Now that he at last had some help, his sense of urgency to find her drove him on and kept him wide awake. He couldn't bear to take the time to stop and rest, not now that he had some pieces of the puzzle. Back near the People's Palace, questioning Tovi just before she died, Nikki had learned the terrible details of how those four women, Sisters Ulysia, Cecilia, Armina, and Tovi, had invoked a chain fire event. When they unleashed powers that had for thousands of years been secreted away in an ancient book, everyone's memory of Kaelin, except Richard's, had in an instant been wiped away. Somehow, his sword had protected his mind. While he had his memory of Kaelin, his sword had later been forfeited in the effort to find her. The theory of a chain fire event had originated with wizards in ancient times. They had been searching for a method that would allow them to slip unseen, ignored, and forgotten among an enemy. They postulated that there was a method to alter people's memory with subtractive power, in a way that all the resulting disconnected parts of a person's recollection would spontaneously reconstruct and connect themselves to one another, with the direct consequence being the creation of erroneous memory to fill the voids that had been created when the subject of the conjuring was wiped from people's minds. The wizards who had come up with the theoretical process had, in the end, come to believe that unleashing such an event might very well engender a cascade of events that couldn't be predicted or controlled. They speculated that, much like a wildfire, it would continue to burn through links with other people whose memory had not initially been altered. In the end, they had realized that, with such incalculable, sweeping, and calamitous consequences, a chain fire event had the very real potential to unravel the world of life itself, so they had never dared even to test it. Those four Sisters of the Dark had, on Kaelin. They didn't care if they unraveled the world of life. In fact, that was their ultimate goal. Richard had no time to sleep. Now that he had finally convinced Nikki, Zed, Kara, Nathan, and Anne that he wasn't crazy, and that Kaelin existed in reality, if no longer in their memories, they were committed to helping him. He desperately needed that help. He had to find Kaelin. She was his life. She completed him. She was everything to him. Her unique intelligence had captivated him from the first moment he met her. The memory of her beautiful green eyes, her smile, her touch, haunted him. Every waking moment was a living nightmare that there was something more he should be doing. While no one else could remember Kaelin, it seemed that Richard could think of nothing else. It often felt to him as if he were her only connection to the world, and if he were to stop remembering her, stop thinking about her, she would finally, once and for all, truly cease to exist. But he realized that if he was to accomplish anything, if he was to ever find Kaelin, he sometimes had to force his thoughts of her aside in order to concentrate on the matters at hand. He turned to Kara. "You don't feel anything odd?" She arched an eyebrow. "We're in the Wizard's Keep, Lord Rawl. Who wouldn't feel odd? This place makes my skin crawl." "Any worse than usual?" She heaved a sigh as she ran her hand down the long, single blonde braid lying over the front of her shoulder. "No?" Richard snatched up a lantern. "Come on." He swept out of the small room and into a long hall, layered with thick carpets, as if there were too many carpets on hand and the corridor had been the only place that could be found to put them. They were mostly classic designs woven in subdued colors, but a few peeking out from underneath were composed of bright yellows and oranges. The carpets muted his boots as he marched past double doors to each side, opened into dark rooms. Kara, with her long legs, had no difficulty keeping up with him. Richard knew that a number of the rooms were libraries, while others were elaborately decorated rooms seeming to serve no purpose other than to lead to other rooms, which led to other rooms, some simple and some ornate, all a part of the inscrutable and complex maze that was the Keep. At an intersection, Richard took a right, down a hall with walls thickly plastered in spiral designs that had mellowed over the centuries to a warm golden brown.
When they reached a stairway, Richard hooked his hand on the polished white marble newel post and took to the stairs, heading down. Glancing up the stairwell, he could see it climb around the square shaft high up into darkness, into the distant upper reaches of the keep. "Where are we going?" Kara asked. Richard was a bit startled by the question.
"I don't know."
Kara shot him a dark look. "You just thought we would go search through a place with thousands upon thousands of rooms, a place as big as a mountain, a place built partly into a mountain, until you happen across something?"
"There's something wrong with the air. I'm just following that perception of it."
"You're following air," Kara said in a flat, mocking tone. Her suspicion flared again.
"You aren't trying to use magic, are you?"
"Kara, you know as well as anyone that I don't know how to use my gift. I couldn't call upon magic if I wanted to." And he most certainly didn't want to. If he were to call upon his gift, the beast would be better able to find him. Kara, ever protective, was worried that he would carelessly do something to call the beast that had been conjured at the orders of Emperor Jagang. Richard turned his attention back to the problem at hand and tried to discern what it was about the air that seemed so strange to him. He put his mind to analyzing precisely what it was that he sensed. He thought that it felt something like the air during a thunderstorm. It had that edgy, spooky quality. At the bottom, several flights down the white marble stairs, they emerged in a simple corridor made of stone blocks. They followed the corridor straight through several intersections and came to a halt as Richard stared down a dark spiral of stone steps with an iron railing. Kara followed as he finally started down. At the bottom, they passed through a short passage with a barrel ceiling of oak planks before coming out into a room that was the center of a hub of halls. The round room had speckled gray granite pillars all around the outside, holding gilded lintels above each passage that went off into darkness. Richard held out the lantern, squinting as he tried to see into the dark passages. He didn't recognize the round room, but he did recognize that they were in a part of the keep that was somehow different. Different in a way that made him understand what Kara meant when she said the place made her skin crawl. One of the corridors, unlike the others, led at a rather steep angle down a long ramp, apparently toward some of the deeper areas of the keep. He wondered why there would be a ramp, rather than yet more of the endless variety of stairs. "This way," he told Kara, as he led her down the ramp and into the darkness. The ramp seemed endless in its descent. Finally, though, it emptied into a grand hall that, while not more than a dozen feet wide, had to be 70 feet high. Richard felt like an ant at the bottom of a long, narrow slit deep in the ground. To the left side rose a natural rock wall that had been chiseled right out of the mountain itself, while tightly fit, enormous stone blocks formed the wall on the right. They passed a series of rooms in the block wall as they made their way onward in what seemed an endless split through the mountain. As they moved steadily ahead, the lantern light was not strong enough to reveal any end in sight. Richard suddenly realized what it was that he sensed. The air felt the way it occasionally felt in the immediate area around certain people he knew who were powerful with the gift. He remembered the way the air itself seemed to crackle around his former teachers, Sister Cecilia, Armina, Marissa, and especially Nikki. He remembered times when it seemed as if the air around Nikki might ignite, so great was the singular power radiating from her. But that sensation had always been in close proximity to the individual. It had never been a pervasive phenomenon. Even before he saw the light coming from one of the rooms in the distance, he felt the air coming from the place. He half expected to see the air in the entire hallway begin to sparkle. Immense brass-clad doors stood open, leading into what appeared to be a dimly lit library. He knew that this was the place he was looking for. Walking through those doors with elaborate engraved symbols covering them, Richard froze in mid-stride and stared in astonishment. A flickering flash of lightning came in through a dozen round-topped windows and illuminated row upon row of shelves all around the cavernous room. The windows, rising 2 stories, ran the entire length of the far wall. 2-story polished mahogany columns rose up between them, hung with heavy, dark green velvet draperies. Gold fringe lined the edges of the drapes, and swagged tassels held them back from the windows. The small squares of glass that made up the soaring windows were not clear, but thick and composed of numerous rings, as if the glass had been overly thick when poured. When the lightning flashed, it made the glass seem to light as well. Lanterns with reflectors all around the room lent the place a soft, warm glow, and reflected off the polished tabletops here and there between the confused disarray of books lying open everywhere. The shelves were not what Richard had at first expected. There were indeed books on a number of them, but other shelves held clutters of objects, everything from neatly folded sparkling cloth to iron spirals to green glass flasks to complex objects made of wooden rods to stacks of vellum scrolls to ancient bones and long curved fangs that Richard didn't recognize and couldn't begin to guess at. When the lightning flashed again, the shadows of the window mullions running over everything in the room, running across tables, chairs, columns, bookcases, and desks, made it appear as if the whole place were cracking apart.
"Zed, what in the world are you doing?"
"Lord Rawl," Kara said in a low voice from right over his shoulder. "I think your grandfather must be crazy." Zed turned to peer briefly at Richard and Kara standing back in the doorway. The old man's wavy white hair, standing out in every direction, looked a pale shade of orange in the lamplight, but white as snow whenever the lightning flashed.
"We're a bit busy right now, my boy."
In the center of the room, Nicky floated just above one of the massive tables. Richard blinked, trying to be sure that he really saw what he thought he saw. Nicky's feet were clear of the table by a hand's width. She stood poised, dead still in midair. As impossible and startling as such a sight was, that wasn't the worst of it. On the top of the table was drawn a magical design known as a grace. It appeared to have been drawn with blood. Like a curtain encircling Nicky, unmoving lines also hung suspended in the air above the grace. Richard had seen a number of gifted people draw spell forms before, so he was pretty sure that that was what he was seeing. But he had never seen anything approaching this mid-air maze. Consummately complex, composed of lines of glowing green light, it hung in the air like a three-dimensional spell form. In the center of that intricate geometric framework, Nicky floated as still as a statue. Her exquisite features seemed frozen to stone. One hand was lifted out a ways. The fingers of her other hand, at her side, were spread. Her feet weren't level, as if standing, but dangled as if she were in mid-jump. Her fall of blonde hair was lifted out a little, as if in the midst of that jump, up into the air, her hair had risen away from her head, just before she was about to come back down. And at that precise instant, she had been turned to stone. She didn't look alive. Chapter 4. Richard stood transfixed, staring at Nicky poised in midair just above a heavy library table, a net of glowing green geometric lines tangled all around her. Nothing on her moved. She didn't appear to be breathing at all. Her blue eyes stared unblinking into the distance, as if gazing on a world only she could see. Her familiar, exquisite features looked perfectly preserved in the greenish cast given off by the glowing lines. Richard thought that she looked more dead than alive, the way a corpse in a casket looked just before being laid to rest. It was an impossibly beautiful and at the same time profoundly alarming sight. She appeared to be nothing so much as a lifeless statue made of flesh and light. Skeins of her blonde hair and twisting gentle arcs and curves, even individual strands of hair, stood out unmoving in midair. Richard kept expecting her to finally and suddenly finish her fall back to the table. When he realized that he was holding his breath, he at last let it out. Seemingly in sympathy with the tempestuous intensity of the lightning out beyond the wall of windows,
The air in the room fairly crackled with the power that had been focused into what was obviously, even to Richard's untrained eye, an extraordinary conjuring. It had been that rare quality to the air that had first caught his attention back in the small reading room. For the life of him, Richard could not imagine what was going on. What could be the purpose of such a use of magic? He was at once fascinated by it and disconcerted that he knew so little about such things. More than anything, though, he found the sight darkly frightening. Having grown up in Westland, where there had been no magic, he sometimes wondered what he had missed, especially at times like this when he felt hopelessly ignorant. But at other times, like when Kalin had been taken, he hated magic and wished never again to have anything to do with it. Those devoted to the teachings of the Imperial Order would find cynical satisfaction at such cold thoughts about magic coming from the Lord Rawl. Despite having grown up unaware of magic, Richard had since come to learn a few things about it. For one, he knew that the grace drawn under Nikki was a powerful device used by those with the gift. He also knew that drawing it in blood was something that was rarely done, and even then in only the gravest of circumstances. As he glanced at the glistening lines of blood that made up the form of the grace, Richard noticed something that made the hair at the back of his neck stand on end. One of Nikki's feet was poised over the center of the grace, the part representing the Creator's light, from where emanated not only life, but the rays that represented the gift that passed through life, the veil, and then on into the eternity of the underworld. Nikki's other foot, however, was frozen mere inches above the table beyond the outer ring of the drawing, over the part representing the underworld. Nikki hung suspended between the world of life and the world of the dead. Richard knew that such a thing was hardly trivial happenstance. He focused beyond the startling sight of Nikki floating in midair, and in the shadows beyond saw Nathan and Anne occasionally illuminated by flashes of lightning, like ghosts flickering in and out of existence. They, too, solemnly watched Nikki in the center of the glowing spell form. Zed, one hand on a bony hip, his other running a slender finger down his smooth jaw, slowly moved around the table, observing the ever-growing, ever more intricate pattern of glowing green lines. Outside, through the tall windows, lightning continued to flash in harsh fits, but the rumble of thunder was muted by the thick stone of the keep. Richard gazed up at Nikki's face. Is she all right? Zed looked over as if he had forgotten that Richard had entered the room. What? Is she all right? Zed's bushy brows drew together. How would I know? Richard threw his arms up and let them flop down in dumbfounded alarm. Well, for crying out loud, Zed, aren't you the one who put her there? Not exactly, Zed muttered, rubbing his palms together as he moved on. Richard stepped closer to the table below Nikki. What's going on? Is Nikki all right? Is she in danger?
This is the end of disc number one. Please continue listening on disc number two.